Our speaker for tonight, Adrian C. from Queens.
How you doing, everybody? My name is Adrian Clark. I am an alcoholic. Or should I say, my name's alcoholic, and I have an illness called Adrian. That's how it felt coming up here in the car, you know. Delighted to be here, guys. Really am. You know, congratulations on your second anniversary, is it? And, you know, it's nice to come to a celebration in Alcoholics Anonymous. Really nice to be invited anywhere today. And, given my own track record, drunk and sober, sometimes I'm just surprised to be invited to do this, you know, to be able to get into a car and, you know, just come up here to, we're in Philadelphia, right? Or outside Philadelphia. I didn't even know where I was going. Thank God for GPS systems, you know, and do that. I'm surprised because, you know, I'm a guy that came into Alcoholics Anonymous shattered from head to toe, you know. I used to say my being was shattered, and I've come to see that your being can't be shattered, you know. I think the lenses in front of it were shattered. And what the young lady read out there from Silkworth, you know, we have a maladjustment to life. And once it's straightened out, everything seems like it's fine, you know. So we get these new lenses, right? And that's been my story. And then, you know, you kind of stop doing it again, and the old lenses come back on, and you're not so straight anymore, and everything's trouble again. And that's the nature of alcoholism, you know. And I've come to see that my alcoholism has absolutely nothing to do with me drinking. It really, you think it was. I got two in front of me here. I always feel comfortable when I have two in front of me, you know. You know, I come from New York. Well, not originally. Just in case you thought I got this accent drinking Irish whiskey. I come from Ireland, but I reside in New York, and I've been there for the last 13 years. And my home group's the Atlantic Group, and we have a great group down there. I love it, you know. And I had lots of prejudices about that group before I joined it. And, you know, my sponsor had a conversation with me one time when I wasn't doing so well. And he said, I think you should join the Atlantic Group. And I said, I think you're crazy. I'm not joining that group. They wear jackets and ties. And he says, you could do with a bit of structure in your life. I think it would be a great idea. And for a whole year, I thought about it. And things got worse and worse. And after the year, I joined the Atlantic Group. And that was about 4 years ago. And my sponsor is unbelievable. What a batting average he has with me, you know. If I would only listen to him the first time around, things would be a lot better, a lot quicker, you know. Any of you new people, hear the people laughing there, they're laughing by identification. And all the other people are just lying, you know. So I'm a member in there, and I got a couple of jobs in there. I've been sponsored, thankfully, in Alcoholics Anonymous and all three of our legacies. You know, because that maladjustment that we talked about there, that spiritual malady, it doesn't respond to one side of our triangle. Really doesn't, you know. I've come to see you can be a big book maestro and, you know several different ways through the steps and, you know, how to write an inventory and, you know, do this with amends and have this meditation and stuff. But if you're not coming out onto the firing line and carrying that message, it's no use to you. You know, you'd just be a sick step worker in your own head, and I've been that guy. And it doesn't work either if you just come to meetings and do a bunch of service. And I'm talking about for me. If you just do a bunch of service and a bunch of fellowship, I've been that guy too. You know what that got me? That got me drunk. So it did. I'm the guy that's got to do all three sides of this triangle, you know. And on Sunday, I'll be going to a different setting. On Sunday, I'll be going into a detox in Queens where some of my guys and it's a Skid Row detox, and I've had that commitment for several years, quite a few years, actually. I can't even remember how long I've had that commitment. And on the fourth Thursday of the month, I go into Creedmoor Psych Ward because that's where it's at for me. It really is, you know. And on Tuesday nights, they call it the spiritual usher, but I'm really the bouncer at my home group. On Park, because we get a lot of crazies coming into our meetings in New York, believe me. And we've got even craziers in the meetings, you know, than the ones that come in off the street. So they call it a spiritual usher, but it really is a bouncer. And, you know, at the next steering committee meeting, I'm going to ask, will they get me a taser gun, you know, to kind of start zapping people that I don't like. And I don't know, maybe they'll go for it. And on Wednesday nights, I'm the co-chair of our big book meeting. And what an experience that has been. The speakers that we brought in there and the format and stuff that we have, guys. And, You know, we've been knocking it out of the park every week. We're great speakers. And, you know, I just love the Big Book. I really do. And I got other jobs in Alcoholics Anonymous. I do other bits of service. And I think all that stuff combined and working the steps, you know, I just came through the steps again there about a year ago with a guy. And, you know, when I first came around Alcoholics Anonymous, I kind of averaged every year and then it kind of thinned out to every 2 years. And I like to stay current with that stuff, you know. I don't want to be the guy that stands up here and talks about a fourth step that I done 5 years ago. You know, that's just not current for me. Not when you're as crazy as I am. That's just not going to work. You know, I can be as sick as a small hospital. I really can, you know. Even today in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the things that I suffer from still is delusion, you know, where I think I still know what's right for me. And if I look at my track record, it's even pathetic to think that. One of the things that I've learned, guys, in here through a loving God and getting access to a power through a loving God, that He always knows what's better for me. Any plan or idea that I ever have, God will always have a better one for me. Even when I think it's a good idea, something my sponsor says to me, Adrian, if you've got a good idea, call me. You know, if you've got a great idea, come and see me. You know, and he's right. And I used to think, what's he talking about? You know, I get good ideas all the time. And that's the problem. You know, when I feel that surge, that emotion coming up, yes, you know, I'm going to do this deal or whatever. I've learned it's time to step back. It's probably not good to do that deal. And one of the things that I've learned, if you're going to stick around Alcoholics Anonymous for a while and be happy, get used to being proved wrong. You know, I'm quite comfortable being proved wrong today. I really am. I got sober on February 18th, 2001. So last month, celebrated 14 years. And, you know, I think for a couple of years there, I kind of took for granted, you know, I'm sober, wow, big deal, over 10 years, lots of people get that. And I kind of took it for granted, and I got shook up a little bit a couple of times. I think as a result of maybe not just that, I think I kind of started to walk through another spiritual desert. And I've walked through quite a few of them in my sobriety. I mean, I'm talking about the type of spiritual desert. See, I'm the kind of alky, guys. When I put the booze down, my real trouble begins. Drinking alcohol is not really my problem. Never really was. When I put it down, something seems to happen to me that, you know, I'm the sort of drinker that causes a lot of trouble. I mean, I caused a lot of trouble. I didn't disappoint my parents. I wrecked their lives. I think I participated in the destruction of quite a few people's lives, actually. You know? And I'm the sort of guy, when I put the drink down, I'm not stupid. I feel the guilt, and I feel the shame, and I feel the remorse from doing that, you know? And then it coincides with this other stuff, resentment and fear, which I could never really identify in my life because it seemed like my normal state. I had no frame of reference to compare it off. Didn't know what resentment was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard all you guys talk about it, and I was like, resentment? You know, that's a strange word. I don't think I've kind of, you know, I couldn't relate to what yous were talking about. And I was having a phone call with a guy one day. I had about 6 weeks sober, and he asked me how I was doing. And I said, you know, the usual answer that an alky gives, I'm doing great. You know, I'm flying. So I am. He says, well, what's going on? I said, see my mom, she's an SOB. And the guys that I'm working with, He goes, dude, you're not doing well at all. That's resentment. I said, is that what that is? I got tons of it. He goes, oh, I know. I know. I got notebooks full of it. And I couldn't understand what it was. And that was an enlightening moment for me, because the type of alcoholism that I had, guys, I was just miserable most of the time and didn't even know it. That's the delusion. Didn't know it. The kind of misery, guys, were when I was a teenager working dead-end construction jobs already back in Belfast, I was the sort of guy that was kind of swinging the hammer, just full of scorn inside me, just hating everybody under my breath. I would have fought for anybody. My own dad said to me, he said, you'd start a fight in an empty house, son. You know, you really would. And he'd say, there's Adrian again, fighting with himself, because that's all I ever done under my breath was fight for myself, run away from home, fight for myself. And I'd be working with these guys, and I'd be cursing them out under my breath. All day, guys, sometimes with a hangover, sometimes not, sometimes just angry inside. And I would go to the bar, guys, after work, and I'd go in, and I'd sit down, and I'd have a couple of pints, and I'd start to have a couple of small ones. And those guys that I resented and hated all day would come into the bar. And some were guys into 3, 4, 5 drinks. They didn't seem like such bad fellas. They really didn't. And I'd sit down and I'd have drinks with them and we'd shake it up and we'd talk and everything. And, you know, and I would swear that, you know what, see, tomorrow when I go into work, I'm going to be a better guy and I'm going to get along with these guys and stuff. And I'd go in and there it would be guys again with a hangover, hating everybody under my breath again. And I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the power not to make that happen. Every once in a while, there'd be a good day or a good couple of weeks, but I was always resort back to that condition. I love the reading that you read. That's just kind of banging me up the head right now, that reading from Silkworth. I really love that. And that's the maladjustment to life. And my first sponsor told me that. He said, Adrian, your problem's not alcohol. Your problem's resentment and fear. And the biggest one of all, as far as I'm concerned, dishonesty. You know, I was a compulsive liar my whole life. Didn't know how to tell the truth. Couldn't tell the truth. After I had 3 steps on the floor every morning when I got out of bed, couldn't understand that one. Again, didn't have the power to get rid of it. Didn't have the power to shake the resentment off. Didn't have the power to shake the fear off. Really didn't. And I love where it talks about in the chapter, we agnostics, lack of power is my dilemma. Lack of power is my problem. That's my problem, lack of power. How do you find this power? Where do you find this power? You know, I didn't even know there was a power to be found. That's the amazing thing about our book, guys. And this resentment dragged on and on and on and on and on for years. I got sober back in Belfast in the north of Ireland. That's where I grew up. And I grew up there in a tricky time where, you know, there was a war going on with the British. And I mean, I grew up in West Belfast, you know, right in the frying pan. You know, I'd walk out my mom's front door and I'd be going to school in the morning. And, you know, these foreign kind of soldiers with their faces painted black would be driving up and down the streets in tanks, and there'd be cars on fire and buses on fire, and these soldiers would be screaming and shouting. And I remember just being so afraid. I remember standing behind my mom when I'd see them coming in to be screaming and shouting, and I could see that my mom was afraid, you know. And I remember they started firing live rounds one day, and you know, my mom threw me down on the steps and lay on top of me, and my heart was pumping in my chest, you know. And I, you know, it talks about resentment being the number one offender, guys, and I agree with that, but self-centered fear is a close second. And they're both the same, but they carry different energies. Resentment carries that, oh, I'll get them back, you know. Oh, you'll wait and see. And you get locked in your mind with that one. But there's this other energy, that self-centered fear that you get in the pit of your stomach, and it just floods all through your body, and you can't shake it off. And I've had that my whole life, guys. And that's not a good thing to have when you grow up in a place like West Belfast. It's really not. There's plenty of tough guys there. Everybody seems to have a fight going on. The community split down the middle. If you go back there, you'll see there's a wall right down the center of the community. It's like the Berlin Wall, and you know not to go on the other side of that wall, and those people know not to come. And it was just full of fear and disunity and all the things that Alcoholics Anonymous is totally the opposite of. You know, that's why I was like a duck out of water when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. It took me time to adapt to what was going on in here. You know, it really did. And I think one of my biggest secrets my whole life was that I was afraid from as far back as I can remember. But if I look back to as far back as I can remember, guys, I don't think I was born alcoholic. I don't think I was born broken. I'm not one of these guys that, you know, from my first thought, it was just bad. I came from a loving home with a loving family with great parents. I'm the youngest of a big Irish family, 3 older sisters, an older brother. I loved growing up at home. Really did. But somewhere along the line, something happened, something broke, something snapped, and it started to change. And, you know, I think what it was that deep down in the depth of my being, I started to establish this feeling that I wasn't good enough, that I wasn't enough. I really wasn't, you know, and it would go and it would come, it would go and it would come. And, you know, I grew up introverted, kind of shy, you know, and looking out around me, watching all the tough guys and stuff. And that feeling, guys, that deep down, it can still come back today. It doesn't come back as much. But being around Alcoholics Anonymous for a while, I've got to see why people were time relapse in here. I've got to see why people were time go back drinking. I've got to see why people were time go back drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. They have a Mercedes. $1 million home. You know, they're on the third wife. The kids are at college. And they got all these things in their life, lots of money and stuff, because they never shake that feeling off, that deep down they're not good enough. That deep down, I'm just not enough. And I think deep down, it's really that I'm just not connected to the right power. And I've done it too, guys. I've put these things in my way. I've put the, you know, I think if I get her, you know, that's going to be the solution right there. If I get the apartment, you know, if I get the car, if I get the house, if I get the job, if I get the money. And believe me, guys, I've got all those things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's nothing worse sitting there with a few years of sobriety under your belt wondering, well, what do you get now? Where do you go from here? What do you do? Where do you, you know? And that feeling that you just can't shake off, guys. So I had this feeling of fear my whole life. And by the time I found alcohol, guys, which was, I was 6 years of age. By the way, the legal drinking age for alcohol drinking in Ireland is actually 8. You know? That's a joke, guys. Come on. Jesus Christ of almighty God. You know, it's St. Patrick's Day on Tuesday. I thought I'd throw a couple of Irish ones out there for you. But they're starting to get a grip on alcoholism. They've actually moved it to 10. I was back in Belfast last summer, where my nephew and we're walking down the Falls Road where I come from, and there's a hospital there, the Royal Victoria, and it was like a bed and breakfast for me at the weekends. I spent many a weekend, many a weekday in there getting my head stitched back together, my staples. Getting people's teeth surgically removed from my arm, and, you know, I was a bit of a brawler back then. And we're walking down the road, and he said something to me that I'd known my whole life, but I didn't know it. And this is my nephew. He's 22, level-headed young man, no alcoholism or nothing, really, really good kid. And he says, "Don't you think it's mad that we have a bar in our hospital?" And I started laughing. I said, "That's right, we do. We got a bar at our hospital." And he goes, "You think that's funny? You don't think that's mad?" I said, "Oh, I think that makes perfect sense. I think that makes perfect sense." And I've been to many hospitals and stuff around the world and in New York and stuff, and I've never seen a sign for the bar in a hospital. But it makes perfect sense. You come out of the psych ward after trying to hang yourself. You know, what's better than getting in for a couple of drinks to take the edge off, right? Because that's what I used to do, you know? And I thought that was funny. Only in Ireland, you know, we have a strange relationship with alcohol back there. In fact, when I first got 12-stepped by a guy, he was explaining Alcoholics Anonymous to me. He was actually my best friend. And I was, hold on a minute, Alcoholics Anonymous? Because I'd never heard of it. And I said, let me get this right. There's actually a room full of people in Ireland and they're not drinking. And that in itself just kind of enticed me to go. I said, I got to go see this. You know, and there they were, lo and behold. And, you know, I started drinking on the streets of Belfast, guys. I started standing out on the streets, drinking bottles of cider, guys, with my friends, getting into fistfights. You know, the trouble started from the beginning. It really did. And I always noticed something about myself. The trouble that I get into was a little more, you know, I always kind of pushed the boat out that little bit further. And I've come to see it, guys, you know, is that fear. I was always trying to prove to myself. And, you know, from I was a teenager, I was coming home, guys, and I'm coming home with my throat cut, and, you know, I'm coming home with stab marks on me, and I'm, you know, I'm getting beat around the head with iron bars and stuff, all because I went for a drink of alcohol. I didn't know how to behave myself. Didn't know how to behave myself when I was sober, but when I started drinking, guys, something happened to me that just dramatically changed me, and my parents started to see that there was something wrong with their son. Their youngest son, and, you know, I'd come home so drunk, and, you know, I'd fall into bed, into the little front bedroom with, you know, the soccer bed clothes and everything, and, you know, I'd waken up the next morning out of a drunk sleep, my mom would be screaming, and the bed would be covered in blood, you know, there'd be a cigarette burn on the pillow where I'd fell asleep with a cigarette in my mouth, and, oh, I'd done that so many times, guys. I set my girlfriend in fire in Spain one time, falling asleep with a cigarette in my mouth, and that hurt with the sun burning all too, you know, and, you know, I'd waken up, guys, and, you know, my parents would be like, they'd be mortified because I come from really good people. I come from good stock. And, you know, I noticed that there was something different about me, guys, when I drank, even from an early age. But I just loved it, guys. It gave me this sense of power. It gave me this sense of ease and comfort. You know, it gave me hope, guys. It gave me hope. Because by that stage, guys, well into my teens, I'm already experiencing that spiritual melody, do you agree, where I don't understand what's going wrong with me. I really don't. I'm getting these bouts of depression when I'm not drinking, and it's horrible, and I'm suicidal. And I've had suicidal ideation from I was 15, 14, 13. And I'm wondering why a 13-year-old kid's walking around and he has this uncomfortable feeling in him. I mean, it's drastically uncomfortable. And I can't communicate it with anybody. And I'm afraid to communicate it with people on the street. They'll see me as weak and they'll see me as... And when I took alcohol, guys, it scrubbed that all away. Alcohol didn't change me, guys. It transformed me into a totally different person. And I came from this quiet kid who played football on the streets of Belfast, kicking the ball off his front wall, to a guy that was willing to do absolutely anything when I was drinking. And it transformed me to such a place, guys, where I remember one Sunday afternoon, I remember going into the local bar. And I hadn't been drinking that long at the time. And there was this guy who was one of the tough guys in my community. He was like 10 years older than me, 60 pounds heavier, and like 30 pounds of that was his head. You know, he, big Fitzy. I mean, he was a big dude, and he had a reputation, man, that, you know, he crunched people up, so he did. And I remember, you know, how I talked about, you know, those guys that come into the bar and my whole perception would start to change when I took the booze. Well, here I am looking at Big Fitzy and my perception's starting to change, you know? And I just thought, what the hell? And I just walked over and cracked him, threw him in the middle of the dance floor on a Sunday afternoon, got on top of him and started pounding the head clean off him. Well, Big Fitzy wasn't happy, you know? And neither was his buddies. And they took me outside that place, and I'll tell you guys, they must have used me as a soccer ball for about 25 minutes. And there's two things that I can remember from that. He came up to me after it, and he put his hand out, and he shook my hand, and he says, fair play to you, kid. And that was my arrival moment right there. I didn't care about the pain and the bruises. I couldn't walk the next day. I'm serious. I couldn't walk. I could not get out of bed and put my feet on the floor. I couldn't. I was just so physically sore. But by that time, my friends had heard about it. They came to my house, and they carried me in the car and brought me to the bar back to drink again. I remember shaking that morning, sitting drinking. But that was my arrival moment. It wasn't the bumps and the bruises and all that stuff. I can take that stuff, guys. I mean, Jesus, look at this face. I've took quite a few of them, you know? But what was the really matter to me, guys, was that I'd started to build a reputation for myself. And to an alcoholic like me, that's all that ever matters, is reputation. People started to look at me different, and I had to perform like this all the time, you know? And I didn't care, guys, because when I was drinking, I was willing to do it. It didn't matter who, didn't matter when. I'd say 75% of the times I went drinking, I get into fights. My last drunk, I get into 3 fist fights on the same day. It's just how I lived. It's how the people that I grew up with lived. Irish people are crazy. You'll be standing drinking with them, you'll get a bottle in the head. You go to the hospital, you get stitched up. The next morning, they'll come around to your house and say, you know what, man, I'm really sorry about that last night. Can I buy you a drink? And you're out drinking with them again, and bang, off it goes again. That's the community that I grew up in. That's how it was. But this reputation, guys, I've come to see, even in the Alcoholics Anonymous, how dangerous it is for me. It talks in the fifth step about the alcoholic that leads a double life. I can do it in here, guys. And I've had the right inventory on this. I've had to see, why does this reputation mean so much to me? I can do it with guys that I sponsor, you know? Secretly, you know, you're sponsoring 10, 12 or whatever guys, 5 guys, and you're not really doing it because you want to help people. It's because of the reputation. You know, you're going to the detox, you're doing all these service commitments and stuff. But again, it's really, and I get really sick, guys, when that happens, you know. So as I went into my teens, guys, the trouble just got worse and worse and worse. My dad started to bring me to places. He started to bring me to the doctor. Back in Belfast, guys, in the 80s and the 90s and stuff, I didn't know anything about rehabs, never heard of detoxes or anything. And my parents didn't know anything about alcoholism, you know. So I'd be coming home in the mornings and stuff, and my dad would say, like, all right, today's the day you're going to do something about this, son, all right? And he'd bring me to the doctor, and I'd sit down, and I'd tell the doctor that I'm depressed, and I'd try to communicate this malady, and I'd try to communicate what was going on with me. And, you know, they'd write me prescriptions for antidepressants. They'd send me to psychiatrists. They'd send me to psychologists. And what would happen is, guys, I'd go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and I'd sit down on his couch. And they'd start to ask me questions about my life and about myself, and I'd tell them stuff. And, you know, the way I'm living my life, guys, it looks like I'm a lunatic. It looks like I have mental problems. And by the way, if you're alcoholic, you do have mental problems. We're actually the elite of the mental fucking health, you know? And they'd ask me questions, guys. And what they do is, these psychiatrists and shrinks and stuff, they call them shrinks for a reason, they'd start to go to the place where it looks like the problem resides. And that's my mind. Because it looks like I'm crazy. And they try to break it down, and they try to find out, why do you behave like this, Adrian? And none of it mattered a damn, because I was going back out to do it again. I was going out to drink on the meds. I was, you know, mixing the meds up and crunching them up to see what I could do with them and stuff, you know. And the end result would always happen. I'd always continue to behave the same way and end up drinking again. And I've later come to see, guys, that I think our big book's right. My main problem does center in my mind, but I don't think that's where it begins. I don't think that's where it begins at all. I mean, there's many trains go through Central Station every day in New York, but that's not where they begin. And I've come to see, guys, that my main problem centers in my soul. It centers right in my soul, and I never understood that. There's a soul sickness that comes from me, guys, through fear and resentment and dishonesty. And it's amazing how it works, and it seems like it's connected to my mind. Because when I tell a lie, guys, this is how my alcoholism works. When I tell a lie, it's almost like a hook going into meat. And I rather than just fessing up and doing something about it, I try to get the hook out, and I can't get it out. And then there's another lie, there's another hook, and another resentment, and another hook, and all of a sudden I got all these hooks in me. And it's just heavy to walk around like that, guys. And I can't do it. And it wasn't until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous and found a sponsor, guys, till I started taking these hooks out. You know, I think one of the darkest moments in my life, there's many things that's brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, guys, but the bottom line was there was a buildup. By the way, what time did I start? Oh, okay. I think there's many things that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, guys. You know, just a buildup of the life that I was living, you know, the violence, appearing in front of the magistrate in court in Belfast, pleading with him, telling him that I had a drink and drug problem. He believed me. The problem was I didn't believe me. You know, got a suspended prison sentence, big fine, went back out. I think there's many things that brought me here, but I think the two main things that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, guys, was the tears in my mother's eyes. 3-4 times a week over the period of 10-12 years. You know, the broken look on my father's face when he found out that I'd taken all his life savings from him. You know, I have the best dad in the world. Thank God for the ninth step. Thank God for the power of the ninth step. I talk to him a few times a week. I have a great relationship with him. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you had to ask me, Adrian, there's one thing you can have right now, you have one wish and it's going to be granted. It would have been to straighten things out with my dad. Would have been that's what it would have been. And I'll never forget the day I left his house when he called me back and I turned around and I seen a broken man standing in front of me. My father was a big, tough Irish man, respected and respectful and a total gentleman. No one messed with him. And he didn't mess with people either. And I seen the tears coming down his cheeks and his face was white and his spirit was broken. Because that's what I do to people because I'm broken, I break people. And he cried and he said to me, he said, I don't know how you done what you've done to me in this family after everything I've done for you. I took thousands from him, check at a time. You know, I stole from my mother's pocketbook so much she actually lifted it and hit me in the head with it. I stole from my grandmother, my sisters. And after a while, guys, all this stuff built up on me. And it was building up on me because, you know, I had a couple of attempts of suicide on my life. One of them I got basically brought back to life and ended up in that hospital right beside the bar. And I remember waking it up in that bed, guys. And at this time, I'd been trying to stop drinking for years and years. That battle was going on in me. Today's the day I'm going to stop. And something would happen. No, tomorrow. Today's the day I'm going to stop. No, tomorrow. And I was trying to stop drinking, guys, for quite a few years. I really got to see my powerlessness. I'd been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just couldn't get it together. And what happened, guys, you know, The weekend of my last drunk, it was pretty much a blackout where I'd promised myself again that I wasn't going to drink again, you know. And somehow I ended up with a bottle in my hand again, guys, and I ended up drunk. And like I'd mentioned earlier on, I ended up in 3 fist fights in the last day of my drinking, guys. And the last one was that night where I came out of a blackout on the road down the corner from my house outside the bar. And there's a guy in front of me, and he's cut right down here. And there's blood all over him, and his girlfriend's screaming. And there's just a whole chaotic, like something out of a Zulu movie. And my buddy got me away, and he put me in a cab. And he drove me to the other side of the town, and we went to an after-hours bar. And I walked into that bar, guys, shook up and shaking and didn't know what was going on, and got hit in the head with a bottle. And I had my last drink in that bar that night. But when I got hit on the head with the bottle and all the commotion and everything that had happened, I swore to myself that this was not going to happen again, and I'm going back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going back. Guys, I had the great necessity many, many times to stop drinking. I lay on a Catholic priest's floor in Belfast in front of him, crying my eyes out because I couldn't stop drinking. Do you know what the sad part about it was, guys? I didn't want to. That's the evil part about alcoholism. You see, alcohol is the great remover. It'll take away your relationships with your parents, every intimate relationship you have, the money out of your father's bank account, the money out of your mom's purse. It'll take the lining off your stomach and come back for your mind. And it done all the above on me, and I still don't want to stop drinking. Still don't want to do it. That's powerlessness right there. I don't know how to surrender. I don't know how to spell it. It's not in my vocabulary. It's not in my nation's vocabulary. You know, surrender means weak. Alcoholics Anonymous just seemed weak to me. You know, I didn't want to come in here to you people. I would come in and sit at the back and you would all just piss me right off. You know, didn't want to be around you. I did not want to be around you at all. And here I am, I'm in trouble. And I remember laying on that priest's floor and he can't do anything for me. But something happened that night when I got hit in the head with that bottle, guys. And there was like a reel that spun through my mind's eye, spun through my ego, guys. All the people that I'd hurt in my life, their faces were coming up in my head. And that battle that had been going on for quite a while, go back to Alcoholics Anonymous, no, go for another drink, go back to alcohol. Oh, maybe I'll go back next week. Maybe I'll get a girl and go back, or maybe I'll get a job and go back. It's just total self-will craziness running through my head. It all came up, guys, and there's a lot of love came from somewhere in the universe or the multi-universes that night. But the obsession to drink alcohol was removed from me. And I went home, guys, that night. 26 years of age, an absolute loser. Back living in my mom's house again. My girlfriend at the time, you know, one of the many girls that I went through, she dropped me off in her car crying. She says, you know what, I really love you, but I never want to see you in my life again. Because that's what I'd done to her, you know. And I never have seen her again. And I'd love to see her. You know, I tried to go back and make amends to her, but I was advised to stay away. And I got a letter to her, and she got a short one back to me, and it was really nice, but I never got to see her to really sit down and tell her how ashamed I am of myself, of what I'd done to her. And maybe that opportunity will come along someday, and I'm willing and ready if it does. And here I am, guys, in my mother's house, again, that she threw me out of so many times, but took me back, because I know how to blackmail people emotionally. You know, I'm pretty good at that. And I'm in that little bedroom, guys, in the front of the house, and I'm not feeling good. I'm really not doing well at all. I got a lot of fear going on. I got a nice black eye. My face is scraped right off me from I got dragged across the floor. And I remember getting down on my knees and saying, God, you know what? See if you're there. I really need you to come right now. I'm a total agnostic. I'm someone who believes in God, but I just feel that he doesn't have any impact in my life, that he really doesn't care about me, that he's kind of sort of forgotten about me, you know? And that's where I felt my whole life. That's why when that chapter was explained to me, it blew me away. It changed my life. It changed my being. And I asked for help that day, guys. And the next day, I knew that something different had to change in my life. And I sat around that day licking my wounds. And that Monday, guys, I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, the crazy thing about how alcoholism works and how fear works, I was afraid to go to a meeting in my neighborhood in case anybody seen me going to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I mean, it's okay for me to, you know, pee on your lawn at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, or, you know, be running around like a Zulu with no shirt on up and down the street. But heaven forbid you see me get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. How embarrassing. And I remember picking a meeting in the city center, and I was afraid to go to that as well, guys, because Belfast was split in two halves, and there'd been a lot of, I knew there was going to be Protestants. I was a Catholic from the other side of that wall, and I knew there was going to be Protestants at that meeting, and I was so afraid to do it, I nearly talked myself out of doing it. And I remember walking into that meeting that night being so afraid, guys, and there was two guys standing there, and they asked me, was I a newcomer? I mean, what a stupid question. I got a black eye out to here, and I'm, are you a newcomer? No, I got 25 years, buddy. You know, I just had a bit of a slip on the way in here, you know. And they knew that I was a newcomer, man. And we sat down, and I'll tell you guys, the first tradition in that group, our common welfare and unity, was a well and live, and it saved my life. Belfast is one of the craziest places on the planet politically, kind of similar to what's going on in the Middle East today. And the first time that I'd ever seen love and healing in Belfast like that between two sets of people was in Alcoholics Anonymous. Unbelievable, guys. those Protestants that I'd hated and resented my whole life, I'd get into fights with them. I'd done terrible things on them and stuff. You know, one of those guys became my grand sponsor, and he really cared about me. We stayed out of their neighborhood, and they stayed out of ours, unless you were going in there to do some devilment. That's the way it was. You know, when I really started to see God working in Alcoholics Anonymous, when these people from the other side of the community started to offer me a ride home at night, and I thought, no, you really don't want to come into my neighborhood. And they were like, no. And they'd say things to me like, Adrian, you know, God give me this car. And if I don't use it for the right things, it'll be taken away. And they'd bring me home. And I found that unbelievable. And that whole group started to sponsor me. But I met a gentleman by the name of Kevin in that group, guys. And he nailed me from the beginning. He was a tough cookie, man, but he showed me a lot of love. He really did. And that's what I needed at exactly that time, guys. I was afraid to do all this. I was afraid to do inventories. I was afraid to do steps. I really was, but you want to know something? I knew that I had to. I just didn't come into Alcoholics Anonymous and say, you know what, all right, I came in there, guys, and the demon was on my tail. I had to do it. I think the greatest gift that God gave me was that demon on my tail. I knew I had to do something, and I had to do it quickly. And the willingness came, guys. And if you've got willingness right now, don't be sitting, don't be window shopping here, guys. Don't be interviewing for a sponsor. Get somebody that looks like they know what they're doing. Grab onto his coattails and stick with him, because see, if you don't, you might go back out there and you may not come back in here again. I see it happening all the time. And that gentleman started to bring me through the steps, guys. So he did the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I asked him for help, and he came and picked me up the next day. And I remember, guys, lying in bed that day thinking, oh, my God, these guys are promising me that this is all going to change. It's going to change for the better. It's going to be great. And then I'm thinking, oof, do I really want to do this? And then I seen him showing up at my front door, and I'm like, maybe I've been overreacting here. You know, I mean, maybe this is crazy. And he picked me up, and he brought me to his house, guys, and he cracked the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, open. And he started reading it to me. And he 12-stepped me, and he started to explain to me what alcoholism was. And I started to identify with him. Alcoholics Anonymous is about spiritual experience, guys. That's the deal here. That's what it says in the 12-step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It doesn't say having quit drinking as a result of these steps. It says having had a spiritual awakening, that's a byproduct. The obsession to drink alcohol is removed as a byproduct of the spiritual experience. And he promised me that. I thought, okay, maybe it's possible. But what I didn't think was possible was to live a life out in this world, guys, have a job, have a girlfriend and everything, and be happy and not drink at the same time. And he said, oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've heard all the words, guys. I've seen all the shows. But I knew this man was telling me the truth for one reason and one reason only. I could identify with him. Identification is one of the most important things in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the first step in spiritual awakening. No identification, you're not going anywhere. You're really not. And he started hammering this home to me, this allergy every time I put alcohol in my body. Can you stop? No, I've got a mind that finds it virtually impossible to shut it off once I start. And the mind thing, guys, I got a mind that works something like this. You walk up to me and give me a bottle of vodka, a pint of vodka, when I'm sick, and say, all right, Adrian, here you go, it's on the house. Have it. And I crack the seal on it and go to put it up to my mouth. You pull a revolver out and point it at me and say, you drink it, I'm going to blow your brains out. Well, I have a man, guys, that starts to do things like this. How can I get that gun off him before he pulls the trigger? You know? How can I get him I don't care, I want the drink. Now, that's never happened to me, and I'm not stupid. But it's happened to me thousands and thousands of times where it's like, Adrian, if you don't go to work tomorrow, you're going to get fired. But I'll have one anyway, ding. You know? If you don't go home tonight sober, she's going to kick you out. Nah, she really loves me, so she does. She'll never kick me out. You know? She knows it's me. You know? I mean, I can have a couple of cocktails, you know? And that happened to me over and over and over again, guys. And that was the powerlessness of alcoholism right there. But the thing that really, really lassoed me in was this malady that we talked about tonight in here, guys. These resentments, these fears that I could never get clear of. And I started to walk through these steps. And I'll tell you, guys, I started to feel some bouts of freedom and the obsession to drink alcohol and stuff was removed from me. But I'm a guy that's had to work my socks off in here. I've been crazy in here doing the whole deal. Sponsoring a ton of guys, doing service, talking to my sponsor on the phone. I'm a guy that's, and that's been part of my journey, and I've come to accept that. But I'll tell you, it's pretty damn good today. I'm probably in the best spiritual condition today that I've ever been in my whole life. Why? Because I have a sponsor. He knows what's going on in my life. He knows everything. I got a 10-step team. I call them the A-team. One of them's in Iowa. One of them's in Colorado. I got a guy in Jersey, and I talk to them regular. One of them's actually staying with me right now. All old-timers were over 20, 30 years of sobriety. They know what's going on in Adrian's life. And what I'm trying to tell you is, if I'm going to take a dovetail and do something stupid, there's people in my life see it coming before I will. Because see, when you're in the frame, you can't see the picture. And that's a part of my program that I need. I'm part of a great home group. I'm doing three sides of this triangle, guys. The whole deal is here, getting connected to God, or, sorry for saying that word to some of you, or a higher power, you know? Because the God word scared the life out of me when I came around here, you know? Every time my sponsor would mention God on the phone, I'm like, oh my God, here, there he goes again. He's like some religious fanatic or something, you know? The word God just kind of freaked me out a bit, and it doesn't today. And what I've come to see, guys, through doing these inventories and stuff, out of our book, there's only one thing that can separate me from God. And that's judgment. This little machine in my head that just judges, 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 judges. I go into my home group, I sit at the back, and I start right away putting people in pigeonholes. Well, look at the glasses she's wearing. She must be a lawyer, you know. He's got a hole in his shoes. He must be a newcomer, you know. And it's judged, and I can't hear a word the speaker's saying. Oh, look at him, you know. I seen him with that newcomer last week. Cheek of him. He needs to work the steps. Look at her. She's got three service commitments. She needs to work the steps. Chatter, 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 chatter. Judgment, judgment, judgment. And I'm missing the whole show. Because you want to know something, guys? See, my whole life, I've been living inside my head in my childhood. And what alcohol done was it found a place deeper inside my head that I could live for a long period of time. And that boomeranged on me, so it did. And here I am. I got nowhere to live at all. But you know what I got, guys? I got what the big book talks about. The fundamental idea of God deep down inside me. And I used to think it was deep down in here somewhere. Until one day, guys, I had an experience where my heart did it exploded. And I really knew where God was. And it was around 5 years sober when I was struggling in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm doing the deal. I'm sponsoring, guys. I've started a group. I'm praying. I'm meditating. You know, I'm talking to my sponsor and I want to die inside. I want to die. And I feel separated. And I don't feel Alcoholics Anonymous is working for me. I really don't. And I'm thinking about offing myself again. And by this stage, I've already started to accumulate a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous. A beautiful wife, beautiful daughter, beautiful place to live, beautiful car, credit cards in my pocket. I come in the Alcoholics Anonymous, guys, with a couple of broken teeth, a black eye, a scraped face, no watch in my arm, no phone, no bank account, no car, no driver's license, no place to live except my mother's house, no job, nothing. And now I got all these things, and I feel worse than ever. What do you do about that? How do you shake that off? Huh? You know? What do you do? And I just don't get it. And I'm having a faith crisis. I'm actually starting to think that there is no God there. And I'm becoming deeply agnostic again. So I am. And I've nowhere to turn. And I've done what my first sponsor taught me to do. I reached out and I asked for help. Here I am living in a strange city. I got sober back in Belfast. Spent my first year of sobriety there. The day after my first year anniversary, I moved back to New York by a significant series of events. Because see, when God wants you to be somewhere, you got no say in the matter. You're getting lifted by the shoulders and you're getting dropped right in there. And you're going to be disorientated for a while, believe me. And that's what happened to me. And here I am, 5 years living in this city, living the dream. And I want to off myself. Where do you go? I mean, there's no therapist can help you with that. There's no doctor can help you with that. I've been to them all, seen them all, spoke to them all. But I'll tell you guys, we've been given something in here. I think this is the only disease in the world where we actually heal each other. We sit down and we heal each other, looking at each other through our eyes and through our hearts. And I reached out and I prayed and I asked for help. And I said, God, you know what? I'm really struggling right now and I need your help if you're there again. Can you please put a new teacher in my life? It'll bring me closer to you. Why would God refuse you someone that's going to bring you closer? And I had a guy within a day. And he brought me right to that page 52 of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, right to those bedevilments again. Right to all those judgments and delusions and those bedevilments. Problems were personal relationships. Problems were money. Problems were fear. Problems were misery and depression. I've had all kinds of doctors prescribe me all kinds of things and tell me you're clinically depressed. You got this kind of depression. You got that kind of depression. I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I have not had depression in quite a number of years. I even surprised my doctor. You want to know why? Because I came to terms that I need to live in all three sides of that AA triangle. I haven't needed chemical recovery. I haven't needed a doctor or a psychiatrist and anything in many, many years, because that gentleman brought me into that book and I had an experience with the second step where my heart exploded, guys, and I'll tell you, I came out through the other side of that experience not needing to know if there was a God anymore. I knew he was there and it changed my whole being and my life's never been the same. I know that God's there. And what I've learned, guys, and this has taken time for me, it used to happen automatically, but now I know what place to go to make it happen. When I step out of the mind of judgment, I step right into the mind of God. Because when I'm in the mind of God and I go in and sit at the back of my home group, it doesn't matter what kind of glasses she's wearing or what kind of hole he has in his shoes or what the speaker's saying. I'm in good, fit spiritual condition. I'm connected. The head's cut off and I'm living from the heart. And that's what the book promises. That's what it promises right there, that I'll be able to live from my heart and I'll be able to live happy and I'll be able to live joyous and I'll be able to live free. And what starts to happen is, guys, the spiritual life comes to truth or fruits in my life. I don't need to add things. I don't need to make things additional. And I don't need the new car. I don't need the new woman. I don't need any of those things. They're nice when they come along, but I don't need them. I've come to see that the spiritual life is about subtraction. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, right? That's what it says. I used to think that meant sometimes I had to search fearlessly for God, but I've come to see that it doesn't. It means that I have to search fearlessly through my own garbage. I have to search fearlessly through my own resentments to find the truth. You see, resentment and fear can be turned into power. That's what the book's about. It can be turned into power, or you can stay sick with it. You can keep judging and you can keep fighting and you can keep your mind shut and you can keep your heart shut, or else you can look at your mistakes in it. And that's transformative right there, right? Anybody that's ever been to a psychiatrist will know the first three columns in our book is, it's like going to a psychiatrist. Who are you angry at, Adrian? You know, column number one, why are you angry? You know, how does it make you feel? Give me $100. See you next week. And they never take us past that because they'll be out of a job, right? But the book goes, that's as far as most of us ever get. We must be prepared to look at this from an entirely different angle. Let's take a look at your mistakes, Adrian. What? My mistakes? That's such an alarm bells for the ego. I don't have any mistakes. Are you kidding me? And I do. And I get to look at them. And I don't want to go back and look at it because I think she's wrong. But when my sponsor says, no, you're going back. And you're going to put it right. And you're going to clean it up. And that's the way I've been sponsored. And when you go back and when you clean it up, boom, the heart opens. I'm not disunified with her anymore. But you see, my ego puts such a fight up, it doesn't want me to do that. It doesn't want me to go back and clean it up. You know, I sponsor a lot of guys that they think they have that resentment with that one that they don't have to go back and clean it up. And sometimes they'll hang on it for a while and stuff, and then when they go back and do it, that one, that amends that, you know, you have that amends you think you're never going to make, to watch them and take off and excel in their life's unbelievable. It really is. It gives me inspiration. And these things that were my handicap, they start to turn to power. These resentments start to turn to power. I've resolved 1,000 fears in here, guys. Like snowballs getting into hot water. Again, the transformation that comes from them. By even just using our simple fear prayer in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, God, remove this fear. Direct my attention to what you'd have me be. My sponsor passed that along to me, so he did. Because I'm a guy that still does get fearful. When I'm walking down Madison Avenue, you're walking past Madison Square Garden and the fear just comes on you out of nowhere. What's that all about? And I used to just attach to the story and run with it. And it would run my life for days and days and days. But now it doesn't. Because I've got a choice. I've got power in my life. I've got God's power. I know where to turn. And I'll say the prayer, God, please remove this fear. And the second part of it is beautiful. Direct my attention to what you'd have me be. So I start directing my attention to what God would have me be. And what would he have me be? I think he'd have me to be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's number one. But he'd have me participating in the universe with the rest of the kids because I haven't done that my whole life. Didn't know how to do it. I've watched everybody else play. I've stood on the sidelines sad because I don't have the tools to do it. And the most amazing things have happened to me just from using that prayer and from just using that format through those resentments. You start to see couples walking down the street holding hands and you go, wow, look, they're in love. You start to hear sounds that you've never heard before and you start to see things that you've never seen before. And that might sound a little weird to a lot of people, but let me tell you this. See, when you come from the self-centered heap of crap that I come from, that's truly amazing right there. And what that is, guys, it's an invitation to live in this present moment. And that's what our book is. That's what our whole life is here, is to live in this moment. I've lived in the past and I've lived in the future my whole life, guys. It's nice to spend some time here. That one is God. May you find him now. I love what my sponsor says. Now, that's a place most of us very rarely visit. You know? I love my sponsor, guys. He's helped me so much. I'm accountable to him. I'm accountable to the guys I sponsor. And the conversations that I have with him are unbelievable. He reveals stuff to me and he helps me with stuff and he gets me to do things that I don't want to do. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. It's about taking, it's a repetition of a series of events that you continue to take over and over and over again, especially when you don't want to take them, when you don't want to come to the home group. That's not the work. That's not the work right there. I used to think that was the work. I used to think it was some kind of secret combination in there. If I do it, boom, they're just the steps. There's the steps to the power. That's why they call them steps. They're not the actual power. They're the steps to the power. You want to know what the work is? The work is on Sunday, guys, when I want to watch a soccer game and I got to go to the detox again. That's the work, and I don't want to go. You know? The work is, guys, when, you know, Jimmy's calling you at 9:30 on a Tuesday night and you're looking at your phone and you're tired because you've been working all day and you don't want to take his call because he's just crazy, you know? And he never, why can't he call at 4 o'clock in the day, you know? And he always calls at the wrong time, but you take his call and you listen to him and you talk to him and you talk him down off the ledge. That's the work, guys. That's the work right there, you know? And that's why so many of us don't make it in here, because we stop doing the work. You know, we get a sense of entitlement because I have 10 years or 15 years now. I don't need to go to the detox anymore, or I don't need to sponsor as many guys because I'm the shit now, you know. I'll tell you, that nearly killed me, that attitude, guys. At 10 years sober, I was leaving Alcoholics Anonymous and didn't even know it. Did not know it. Had a bit of trouble with my former sponsor, you know. Didn't deal with it in a very polite manner. Was leaving Alcoholics Anonymous when I met my current sponsor. And he said, you know, Adrian, you don't have a sponsor right now. What are you going to do? And I thought, you know, what's he talking about? He doesn't realize how spiritual I am, you know? He says, well, I've been sober 35 years and I still have a sponsor. And I thought, well, that's mighty big of you, you know? I mean, he said, Adrian, if I don't have a sponsor, I'm being guided by self. And he said, what can I do for you? And I thought, well, what do you mean, what can you do for me? I just couldn't see it, guys. And you can't. That's the nature of alcoholism. He says, I'd be willing to work with you. And I thought, you know, it's, all right. Well, like, you know, I mean, I'll give it a shot, you know. And he said, okay, call me to my house in the morning. And I called him to his house the next morning. And we had a talk about the first three steps. And he turned around and he said something to me that blew my mind. He said, you know, I'd like you to start making a list of people, people who you think are wrong and need straightened out. And I thought, all right, I can do that. I got the pen out and the paper out, and I started writing them, guys. And I thought, son of a gun. 19 resentments. If he had turned around and said to me, Adrian, I think you should write a resentment inventory, my ego would have been so against it, not me, Mr. Spiritual. And he saved my life, guys, by bringing me back through the steps again, tricking me back into doing it. And thank God I've had people like that in my life. Guys, I'm living the life in here. I'm doing the deal. I really am. It's been unbelievable, my journey here. At a year sober, guys, when I came back to New York, up until that point, I was so much full of fear. Where I'm going to find a job, where I'm going to live. You know, I'm going to be stuck back in Belfast here my whole life doing a job in construction, da-da-da-da-da. I'll tell you, guys, when I took that third step, and I took the third step with a black eye and a cut face, I had nothing to bargain with God with at all. There was no area in my life I was doing well. I'm just a kid from West Belfast who walked in the Alcoholics Anonymous one day and everything just changed. That's what my sister said to me. She said, what happened to my brother? He just went in the AA one day and everything just changed. And I'm like, really? Is that what you think? You don't realize the work that I've done? And I've got to clean stuff up with my sisters and my mom and my dad and stuff. Fasten your seatbelt, guys. See if you're new. The first year is really hard. And then every year just gets harder and harder and harder. I'm just kidding, buddy. I'm just kidding. Man, I'll tell you, I've been around here long enough to know what can happen to you. I really do, man. I've got the gifts that I've been given in here are seriously unbelievable, and they're not like the gifts that I thought that I wanted. You know, like I said, guys, on Sunday I'm going into the detox, and I'm bringing a couple of new guys in there with me. Sometimes there's four of us go in, sometimes there's five of us go in, sometimes there's six of us go in. But the common denominator when we go in there, guys, all the guys that's going in there, whether they're 30 days, 90 days, or 60 days, they have all got experience with the steps. Maybe the first step, the second step, the fourth step, the eighth step, they've all got experience with it. And what we do for 10 minutes each, we share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and what we're doing now. All of us. And the thing that I noticed, guys, when I'm leaving that detox, see, the guys that I walked in there with that had the big long faces that are worried about the girlfriend and worried about the job and all those stupid things that we worry about. They're not smiling when they're walking out. They're laughing and they're joking with each other, so they are. You want to know why? Because we've just met face to face the very thing that heals my soul. The guy that can't give me anything at all. The guy sitting in the paper slippers, guys, with the burn marks on him and the black eye, just like I was. The guy who's just been out of the psych ward just like I was. I can't get that from a woman. I can't get it from money. But I can get it from another drunk just sitting there. And I'll tell you guys, there's times I don't want to do it, but I go do it anyway. And I walk out of that place with a spring in my step. And it puts such a spring in my step, guys, that I still have that spring in my step when I go to work on Monday morning. And I love doing that. I really do. I get so much from doing it. Because I don't think any of us are ever too clever or ever too recovered not to go back out there and have another run at it. I've seen it happen and over and over and over again. And with the kind of mind that I have, guys, I'll tell you, I'm just glad I'm in here in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous with you guys. I really love you. Thanks for having me tonight.